Good. How are you feeling?
A little better. Don't sound that good, but...
You don't.
Charlie, we were all very proud of your speech. I thought it was bad form, elbowing the president. I would have said
that would have been. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the 9:30 session of the Portland City Council on January 23rd. Council, please come to order. Carla, please call the roll.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman?
Here.
Novick?
Here.
Hales?
Here. I understand we have a large group of students here this morning from a number of Middle Eastern countries who are here for Chet Orloff's Portland class. Just want to welcome you to Portland and to the City Council this morning. We're glad you're here. Thanks for coming. We have some communications items this morning. Carla will ask you each to come up in turn. If you haven't done this before, when you come up to speak, you have 3 minutes. If you're representing an organization, please let us know, and then please do state your name for the record. Thank you. Carla?
Item 53, request of Ken Locke to address council regarding Terwilliger Sewer Project. Mr. Locke is not able to make it and will be rescheduling.
Okay.
Item 54, request of Mark White to address council regarding community development in the Powellhurst-Gilbert.
White? No, there he is.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Mark White. I'm president of the Powellhurst-Gilbert Neighborhood Association. Fortunately, I did really big type, but I forgot my glasses. For the past few years, the Powellhurst-Gilbert Neighborhood Association has been cultivating a mixed-use development project currently named Gilbert Place that would seek to bring much-needed retail and commercial development along with housing to veterans to the southern end of Southeast 122nd Avenue. The project also includes a community kitchen, a community gathering space, and an international marketplace especially targeted to engage the numerous cultural newcomers in our neighborhood. The project is designed to be both a jumping-off entrepreneurial opportunity for local residents, as well as an attempt to prevent displacement through gentrification as the area finally begins to improve. A copy of the original concept paper, along with several written copies of testimony, is included with the packet that I just gave you. Late last summer, a vacant piece of property perfectly situated for Gilbert Place and within the Lentz Town Center urban renewal area went up for sale. Powellhurst-Gilbert Neighborhood Association approved a request to ask the Portland Development Commission to purchase the property and secure it for future development. The Portland Development Commission refused that request. Despite having 30% of the urban renewal area within the boundaries of the Powellhurst-Gilbert Neighborhood Association, Powellhurst-Gilbert has benefited very little from being a part of an urban renewal area. This project, along with several other public investments in the area, has the potential to finally reverse the negative economic trends of the last several years, so clearly illustrated by the change in our free or reduced lunch rates from around 39% to just over 80% in just 15 years. We know from past history that council has the ability to influence Portland Development Commission decisions, as evidenced by the restoration of $1.1 million in funding for Leech Botanical Garden. We hope council will show the same interest and effort as it did for Leech Botanical Garden for Gilbert Place and assist in our efforts to create a community-driven revitalization effort. By doing so, council will not only address the unintended results of the Outer Southeast Community Plan, but also solidify the public investments that have already been made in the area in the form of public housing projects. The city charter states that the Portland Development Commission shall implement the vision and goals of the city and advance social equity in carrying out its duties, among other things. We feel Gilbert Place is a perfect illustration of Portland's vision and goals and clearly advances social equity and numerous other issues of critical importance to all Portlanders. Of note, it also emphasizes teaching people how to fish instead of giving them fish. which is something that will create long-lasting, sustainable economic viability for those who participate. Lastly, it should be noted that the property in question is part of the streetscape improvement project along Southeast 122nd and will have sidewalks installed along its entire 125 feet of frontage. This will ensure that even if we are not successful in developing the project and the Portland Housing Bureau does not use the property for housing after our attempt to do so, that the PDC will still be able to sell the property at a fairly substantial profit. We hope you will join us in our efforts to revitalize our community and advocate on our behalf with the Portland Development Commission and strongly encourage them to change their position and purchase this property for future development. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Mm-hmm. Appreciate you bringing this to our attention.
Thank you.
Next, item please. 55, request of Lori Boysen to address council regarding community development in Powellhurst, Gilbert.
Good morning.
Thank you, Mayor Hales and Commissioners. My name is Lori Boysen, and I own a small home-based business advertising the bag in the Powellhurst-Gilbert neighborhood. I am the Secretary of the Midway Business Association, co-chair for the Division Midway Alliance for Community Improvement, a Portland Neighborhood Prosperity Initiative, and a board member for the Powellhurst-Gilbert Neighborhood Association. I have lived in Powellhurst-Gilbert since 1998, and I'm proud of the work Powellhurst-Gilbert Neighborhood Association does to improve our neighborhood and surrounding community. With the Lentz Urban Renewal on the south end of Powellhurst-Gilbert and Division Midway Prosperity Initiative on the north, the time appears to be perfect to effect tremendous change in our neighborhood. And the mixed-use development known as Gilbert Place is a perfect fit for Powellhurst-Gilbert. If located at the 122nd Avenue property, Gilbert Place's multi-use and micro-enterprise focus will provide much-needed commercial services to an area of the community that is especially lacking in that department. The Gilbert Place project supports the city's neighborhood economic strategy, which recognizes that robust commercial districts are essential for thriving neighborhoods. Gilbert Place's amenities will also provide much-needed services to a largely multicultural neighborhood. Approximately 30% of the businesses in the Division Midway Alliance's boundaries are minority-owned. I envision a rich partnership between Division Midway Alliance and Gilbert Place, with multicultural business-oriented educational classes at Gilbert Place and DMA district events featuring local micro-enterprise products created in Gilbert Place's kitchen. DMA performed a neighborhood survey last year, and one repeated request was for an international market in the neighborhood. Gilbert Place addresses this need. I urge City Council to ask the Portland Development Commission to purchase the Southeast 122nd Avenue property and make Gilbert Place the next Lentz Urban Renewal Area project. We also respectfully ask for a liaison from the mayor's office to meet with the Powellhurst-Gilbert Neighborhood Association regarding Gilbert Place. Thank you very much for your time and support.
Thank you.
Lori, before you go, could you tell us the name of your business again?
Advertise in the Bag.
And how do you just want to find out about your business?
Advertiseinthebag.com.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Item 56, request of Silas Covert-Keefe to address council regarding more development in Powellhurst-Gilbert, East Portland area.
Morning.
And so what do I do? I just say my name?
Yes, just state your name for the record.
Okay. My name is Silas Covert-Keefe, and I'm with the Powellhurst-Gilbert Neighborhood Association. As a lifelong resident of East Portland and a student of community development here at PSU, so I see Gilbert Place as an incredible possibility because it can serve as the first great step towards forming a beautiful and vibrant community. I've lived in the Powellhurst-Gilbert neighborhood for 20 years, and I've watched as year after year, more high-density, low-income apartments are built as the city's poor are continually forced into one section of Portland. And as a student of both political science and community development, I'm now coming to understand that those people on the lowest end of the income scale have the smallest opportunity to have their voices heard. And this is why I am frustrated when I hear that the PDC, who is willing to spend $169 million, will not help grant us the money to purchase this land, which is only 0.04% of the proposed education URA. Gilbert Place is an idea that follows the asset-based style of community development, which is to say it is an idea that is generated from the bottom up. I've been taught that the most successful type of community development occurs when a community faced with problems looks inward for its solutions. When people get together and look at what they have to work with and start to turn their problems into solutions and utilize their resources. And at first, that does require that a struggling community receives aid from city entities. Gilbert Place serves many purposes, but to me, as a resident of the area, it will serve as a social place. It will be a place that my friends and I can hang out to shop, to eat, missed that a lot. As it is currently, my friends and I all have to travel west in towards inner southeast Portland past 52nd to get books, to shop, to even go on dates. Not only is that inconvenient, but it means that the residents of Powell-Hurst-Gilbert, like my friends and I, are not spending our money in the neighborhood, but instead taking it to the inner southeast, which again only leaves us spending money on rent for more high-density, low-income apartments. And I realize that I'm talking in a circle, but that's why they call it a cycle of poverty. So again, I can't help but feel frustrated when the Portland Development Commission will not help us, who have received nothing but sardine-style apartments, to try and develop our neighborhood into something better. Because if we are ignored and this opportunity is wasted, then I have no doubt that the vacant lot that we are hoping to use for Gilbert Place will instead be developed into more high-density, low-income apartments. Thank you.
Thank you.
Item 57, request of Joe Walsh to address council regarding police having guns in council meetings.
Morning.
Morning, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. A few weeks ago, there were two police officers here, and they were asking for funds to do investigations on truck accidents. That's not what I'm concerned with. What I noticed was the police officers had their guns with them. And the thought went through my head, why? Why do they have guns? You have your own security people here that are very efficient. I actually like them. The police officers often will be criticized by activists here in the council. This is the great democracy. This is where we argue. This is where we either accept or reject ideas. It's a little disconcerting when you're arguing with someone with a gun. I don't want them to shoot me if I say something out of line. So I wondered, where else would a gun-free place be? Here in Portland, some of the federal buildings have signs say no guns. You can't bring a gun into the cafeteria. If you go on a plane and you're a police officer, you will be arrested unless you made arrangements. I often see TV programs that police officers will check their guns in the jails and in the prisons. And just think about that. The logic tells you that's not a bad idea. Leave the guns outside because a prisoner may get it and all hell will break loose. This could be a gun-free zone. This chamber, we could do this on our own. We don't need great congressmen or senators. We could do this here. I don't expect you to do it, but I hope that you think about it. It would be nice not to have guns in this chamber. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we have a 9:30 time certain. Should we take that?
Do you want to do the consent agenda first?
I have some items to pull. Well, okay, let's go ahead. I'm still confused by our calendar, which places things at time certain and then puts consent before that, even though it's not printed that way.
All right.
Tempted to change that, but I won't do it right now.
We've had a request for items 67 and 73 to be pulled.
And I believe there was one more. Is that right?
I just have the two.
Did you also want to pull item 63, Commissioner Prince?
Yes, 63, I understand, is being pulled back to the mayor's office.
63.
Who is pulling 67?
Joe Walsh.
We have a citizen request for one of those.
Could you go over the numbers again, please?
So I have 63. 67 and 73 being pulled.
Correct.
Okay, so are there any other requests to take items off the consent agenda? If not, I believe we can vote on the remainder of the consent agenda.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Mayor Hales and colleagues, as part of the consent agenda, we are today appointing three people to the Home Forward Board. And since we have the distinguished chair here and one of the appointees, I'd like to take this moment just to have them stand. Would Harriet Cormack, the chair, please stand? Would Brian Lessler, the Gresham representative, please stand? Brian is the Gresham City Council representative, and by our action today, we are also appointing Katie Such, who works at PNC Bank, and she will be filling the soon-to-be-vacant position previously held by Gretchen Cafori. And we're appointing Jorge Guzman, who works at Hacienda CDC as a program manager, and he will be filling Shelley Romero's seat. Her term expires next month. These are incredibly important appointments. We want to thank Mr. Lessler, Ms. Such, and Mr. Guzman for agreeing to serve, and Harriet for continuing her leadership as chair. Thank you very much. I'm pleased to vote aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. So now we move to the 9:30 time. So
Mayor, can I just point a procedural question? Since Mr. Walsh has pulled one of the Portland Housing Bureau items, it would be helpful to know whether we need to have staff here to address any questions and when you might be taking that matter up. I don't know whether there's a substantive concern or just a chance to make a statement.
Yeah, let's assume that that we'll take up the pulled consent items at the end of this morning's council agenda.
Okay, so we'll have staff here to answer any questions.
I don't think there's a great deal of time that's going to be used by the other regular agenda items, but that'll give you time to have some staff here. Would that be helpful to have staff here? Okay.
Good. Thank you.
Okay. Now we have a 9:30 time certain, a resolution.
Item 58, adopt resolution honoring the life and public service of Art DeMuro to the City of Portland.
Thank you, Mayor. It's truly a privilege to bring this resolution up for a vote here at the City Council. As I know all members of Council are aware, Portland lost an incredible citizen and historic preservation advocate late last year when Art DeMuro lost his battle with cancer. Art was a stalwart for preserving our built environment, and one can truly say that Portland looks and feels the way it does due to Art DeMuro. Whether it was creating an incredible home for the University of Oregon's School of Architecture in Old Town, to his efforts to reutilize Washington Monroe High School on the east side, Art was tireless in his efforts to save significant buildings all over our great city. I happen to have had the good fortune back in, I think it was the year 2000, to ask Mayor Katz to appoint Art to the Historic Landmarks Commission. And he tackled that job with relish and really quickly rose to become the Landmarks Chair. And I guess, you know, the frustrating thing about Art was he was always correct. You know, he was the type of person, you know, a lot of people talk about historic buildings and say, oh, you ought to save that. You ought to save that. It's usually somebody else's property. Property owner can't figure out how to save it. Well, Art, he stepped up, bought properties, and actually made it happen. He saved historic properties and made it work. So when the Portland Landmarks Commission passed a resolution lauding Art's work and asking the City Council to take the same step, it was a pleasure to get this on our agenda and provide an opportunity for the public to express its gratitude for Art's work in our community. One of Art's daughters, Natalia DeMuro, is here. Thank you. And I know that members of the Landmark Commission wish to make some comments, and so I will turn it over now to, before I turn it over to Carrie Richter, I just want to state that, in closing, Portland really won't be the same. It won't be the same when we're discussing historical resources and historic landmark policy without Art in the room. His wisdom, knowledge, and forthright demeanor will be sorely missed, as well as the fact that he was always right. So let me now introduce Historic Landmarks Chair Carrie Richter as our first speaker.
Thank you, Commissioner Salzman. Mr. Mayor and commissioners, I am honored to speak to you today about Art. Of all the people in this room, I probably knew him the least, but I did have the honor of serving with Art for 6 years on the Landmarks Commission. On his last commission meeting, we got together in one of the gorgeous Gus O. Solomon courtrooms. We put Art in the witness box, and we nominated him to the National Register of Historic Places. We held a public hearing to do that, and we put together a draft nomination form, and I'd like to read the summary portion of that nomination that I believe has been distributed to you. Carried out in an Italian-American mid-century variant of the classical revival style in 1950 to a design by his parents, the subject property, Art DeMuro, is eligible for listing in the National Register of Historic Places under both Criterion A for association with the historic preservation movement in Portland, Oregon, and Criterion B for association with other disreputable individuals who make up the Portland Historic Landmarks Commission, which he has chaired for 4 years. Chairman DeMuro has, apparently from an early age, exhibited the rare combination of good humor, frankness, and classiness that preparers believe make him eligible for listing. For example, he is widely reported to have persuaded his own mother to dress him in a conservative business suit with a tasteful tie from a very early age. However, because this cannot be proven definitively, criterion consideration G for properties achieving significance less than 50 years is also invoked. He is known conclusively to have gotten away with publicly criticizing Mother Teresa's state of clothing in 2007, even though the poor woman had been dead for 10 years at the time and was already a candidate for sainthood. His 10-year incumbency to the Portland Historic Landmarks Commission is the longest in its 25-year history. Opinions about Mr. DeMuro vary. Some detractors call Mr. DeMuro obstinate and or power-crazed, while his fans often refer to him as fair and tough-minded. But we all agree that he delivers difficult news in rare style, living up to the literal meaning of his name, the art of the wall. At the hearing, we took up important considerations as to whether the removal of Art's mustache significantly altered the value of the historic resources, and folks got to weigh in on the compatibility of the resource to the district as a whole. We'd like to share with you Art's final comments that he made at that meeting. We have about a 90-second audio clip that we'd like to share, and the recording isn't great, but if we're all quiet, we'll be able to hear it.
Do you have anything you'd like to add?
This is my time to talk.
Now that it's been decided that you're definitely endorsed for the National Register.
You have 3 minutes. yes, I'd like to say something. So I want to thank everyone for doing this. It's really terrible sitting in this chair and having got these comments about. So I guess that's payback. I do want to tell you that I thought a lot about, you know, how do I feel about leaving the commission and you know, what I miss the most about it. And I thought, well, maybe it's the power. And I thought, yeah, that might be the power. But then I thought, no, you know, not really that much power. But technically, I am chair until midnight, October 1. I just want you to know. Okay, and second of all, I thought, well, maybe it's the prestige. Because I did have a meeting with Commissioner Fish a couple months ago, and I called in Nick the whole meeting, and he called me Mr. Chairman the whole meeting. That was pretty good. That was okay. And I thought, maybe what it is, you know, the attraction to the ladies. You know, you really can't overemphasize how powerful that is to walk into a happy hour and say, hey, good looking Landmarks Commission.
I considered Art a mentor, and I believe that many people in this room did as well. This city has been blessed with his many contributions, and we are grateful to the council for taking a moment to recognize him. Thank you. I believe we have a few other Landmarks Commissioners here, and if I could, I'd like to ask them to stand just so we could acknowledge that they're here. And we appreciate them coming out to endorse Art, and I will turn it back over to Fisher Saltzman.
Okay. Well, thank you, Carrie. I don't see Carla, but are there people who wish to testify?
Anyone else?
Anyone else? Okay. I guess that's it then. So we can...
I think she's re-entering, so we'll wait to take a vote when she's here to record it. There we go. That's okay. So we didn't have...
Carla, we don't have anybody signed up.
No one else signed up, correct. Yeah. So
we're ready. So we're ready for roll call.
Okay. Fritz.
Art was somebody that I got to know over the course of being on the council, and he gave me a tour of the White Stag Building, and it was so delightful to hear his passion for that building, and but more so for the place and the people that were in it. I mean, he truly understands the connection between people and place and the importance of historic preservation. And Landmarks Commissioners, I need a new go-to person for whenever there's a question at council on historic issues, because Art would always take my phone calls, would always give me both sides of the issues, all sides of the issues, and explain why his was the best. And I more often than not agreed that he had a great sense of Portland, and like me, was not originally from here, but became one of Portland's most favorite sons and one of my good friends. Generous and knowledgeable and friendly, as I heard at his memorial, a great father, a great co-worker, somebody who left us way too soon. So I hope that, as well as this memorial, and thank you, Commissioner Saltzman, for bringing it, that we will shortly pass the Skidmore design standards and make sure that the things that Art cared about are continuing to have standards and codes so that they get done on a regular basis. And thank you to the Landmarks Commissioners for all of your work on these issues. Coming from England, I was married in a church that was built in 1050 and grew up in a town that was founded in 55 AD. If we don't save our historic buildings, then we won't have any historic buildings that were built 1,000 years ago. In 1,000 years. And so that's why I appreciated Art's work, and more than that, I appreciated his life and his leadership and the person that he was. Aye.
Fish?
First, Commissioner Saltzman, thank you for bringing this forward. And I want to echo what Commissioner Fritz said. I appreciated so much about Art, the private briefings, making sure that major issues were on our radar well ahead of the curve, the public testimony. And the constant thread was this idea that if we didn't protect our history, we were engaging in acts of civic vandalism, that if we did not protect and understand our history as evidenced by the built environment, we were going to be a city that was poorer for our failures. And he was front and center on Memorial Coliseum and the efforts to save that gem, which I fully supported. He was very persuasive on the issue to me of Skidmore and why that district is unique and special. And he was on the verge of pulling off a minor miracle in helping leverage the long-stalled development of the Washington Monroe High School site, which, if that piece was successful or is successful, leverages a lot of other public benefit in an area that is deficient in certain public amenities. A gentle man with a huge passion for life and this cause, and someone who made an enormous difference in the policies of this city. He will be greatly missed. I was honored to know him. And again, I thank Dan for bringing this recognition forward. Bye.
Saltzman.
Well, I want to thank the Landmarks Commission for bringing this forward. And I also just wanted to acknowledge, in addition to Natalia DeMuro, but we have Craig Kelly, who is Art's business partner for many, many years, also here. So thank you all. Aye.
Novick.
I also want to thank Commissioner Saltzman very much and the Landmarks Commission for bringing this forward. I had, I think, two conversations with Art DeMuro, but they left a lasting impression. I mean, you know that politicians spend a lot of their time calling people and asking them for money. And sometimes you call people and you don't know anything about them except they gave money to somebody else. And I called Art once, you know, two summers ago, whenever it was, and he quickly said, you have no idea who I am, do you? And he said, you're right, I don't. And he said, yeah, well, I do stuff relating to historic preservation. Do you mind taking a few minutes to talk about that? And I said, sure. So we talked for about 40 minutes, and I mean, it was an issue I knew very little about, and I really enjoyed the chance to hear from the guy who, I mean, is demonstrated here today, who's the man on historic preservation. And then a couple of months later, I was invited to a forum on historic preservation. So that morning, I called Art and said, Art, can you tell me again the 45 minutes worth of things you told me 2 months ago? And he said, no problem. And he walked me through it, so I didn't sound like a complete idiot that night. And I was really looking forward to further tutorials, and I was so sad to lose him. And I want to say particularly that I really appreciated the Landmarks Commission playing that tape of his voice. And I'm really appreciative to Commissioner Saltzman for giving us this opportunity, and I'm honored to vote aye.
Hales.
Dan, thank you for doing this, and thank you for putting on this great presentation this morning about a wonderful guy. Excuse my voice, by the way. Art was a treasure. He was a practical visionary. He was somebody who figured out how to make very difficult projects in historic preservation actually happen. There's a phrase about architecture that calls it frozen music, and I like that because it's art, but it's permanent and visible. And I think Art had that sensibility about the sweet music of these beautiful old buildings and how precious that is, and once lost, impossible to replace. So that sensibility drove him in all he did, and that practical ability to make those things happen. And our city, we are going to miss this man so much. I know his family does. I know his business partners and all of the activists and volunteers who work so hard in this cause will. But we can all look around every day all over the city of Portland and see the frozen music that's still here because of Art DeMuro. Thank you. Aye. All right. That was wonderful. Thank you, Dan.
Yeah, thank you. I like your remarks.
Let's move to the regular agenda. Again, we'll return to the polled consent items at the end of the calendar. Item number 74, I believe.
Amend contract with Portland Streetcar, Inc. to provide additional professional services for project management and vehicle engineering services for production of a domestically manufactured streetcar.
Good morning.
Such service.
Thank you.
Good morning, Vicki.
Good morning. For the record, I'm Vicki Deedy, and I'm with the Bureau of Transportation. I'm the city's project manager for Portland Streetcar. The amendment before you, I need to give you a little bit of background on the prototype streetcar, because it's part of the impetus of this amendment, a big part of it. Just before we started service on the East Side Loop, excuse me, the city issued a certificate of conformance to Oregon Ironworks for the prototype streetcar vehicle. And this stated that the car met contractual specifications to a level sufficient to put the car into temporary service. There were a number of restrictions noted on the certificate, the main one being that the top speed was limited to 25 miles per hour. And there were other small deficiencies that were identified. So Oregon Ironworks has proposed, and we are evaluating, a two-phase approach to address all the issues involved with getting the prototype 100% certified, and that we will do final acceptance. Phase one is going to fix a number of small items, and this will occur at the streetcar maintenance facility. Phase two, once we have received two of the production vehicles and we have certified them for service, the prototype will go back to Oregon Ironworks. where they will remove, they and Rockwell Automation will remove the power drives and replace them with larger drives. And this will let the car meet the specifications for acceleration and deceleration up to 30 miles per hour. So the amendment before you will increase the scope of work and the compensation related to vehicle engineering services under the Portland Streetcar Inc. contract. And the work is performed by LTK. They provide us with the expertise to make sure that the cars that we run on our system are totally safe. So we are seeking approval to increase the compensation by $145,000, and it too will be implemented in two phases. $50,000 now for services under their Oregon Ironworks Phase 1 work, in addition to putting together the final scope of work for Phase 2, and an additional $95,000 subject to the city project manager's approval for the specific scope of work developed for Phase 2. The source of the funds on this is unobligated grant funds. We received from the Federal Transit Administration $6.88 million with no city match required, so it's all federal money. This will pretty much use up our contingency for the project. So I would be happy to answer any questions that anybody has.
So for clarification, this is money that you'll be passing through to the engineering specialty contractor that's supervising the technical work.
It's not
additional compensation for the vehicles themselves to Oregon Ironworks.
None whatsoever. Their contract indicates that for this amount of money that's been a part of their contract for quite some time, they will provide us with a working car.
Well, this has been a long and winding road, Vicki. What's your level of confidence now?
It gets better with time. This contract was initially approved in 2007, so we have been working on it for quite some time. We're down to kind of the final bits and pieces to fix the prototype. Now, understand that we switched out the propulsion system from a Škoda propulsion system into the Rockwell automation system. So we added some complexity to the project front end. So I'm feeling fairly confident. We're down to the nitty-gritty on this.
Other questions?
And when you say we're almost out of contingency, are we almost at the end of the project?
Yes.
Are there any other phases or items left outstanding?
No. We get through phase two, and they put in the drives, and we do final certification, and then we take final acceptance of the car.
So what is the status of the cars that they're producing for us?
Well, now
in terms of being in service.
Okay, this is we received the first car. It was Monday evening, I believe, and the second car should be here in about 6 weeks. The preliminary schedule for this work to start on the prototype is like in March, so we should come pretty close.
Other questions? Great. Vicki, thank you.
Thank you.
Is there any public testimony on this item?
No one signed up.
Any other further discussion, Council? Then we'll take a roll call, please.
Fritz?
I'm glad to hear this project is getting done. I hope this is the last amendment and that we get the streetcars in operation.
Me too.
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
I'd just like to comment that I understand the money is not going to Oregon Ironworks, and I appreciate our partnership with Oregon Ironworks, but I mean, it's going to the engineering firm that's overseeing this change, which is necessary because the streetcar does not meet our specifications. And I'd be interested in talking to OMF about in future whether our contracts could address this kind of issue and say that the company that delivers the product that doesn't meet specifications might have to pay for the additional oversight services the city has to pay for. I mean, my understanding is that our contracts aren't drawn that way now, so that's not an option here, but I just want to ask OMF if that's possible in the future. And I vote aye.
Hales.
This has been a difficult and sometimes frustrating process of getting these new vehicles in service, but I'm pleased to hear your optimism, and I just want to thank you, Vicki, for the great work that you've done for many years. From the first vehicle purchase to now the latest. So thank you for your good work.
Thank you.
Please vote aye. Thank you.
Next, item 75, authorized contract with Oregon Ironworks, Inc. to manufacture, deliver, and attach one boathouse in the amount of $1,690,100.
Good morning, Chief and team.
Good morning. Good morning, Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Christine Moody. I am the Chief Procurement Officer in Procurement Services. And you have before you a procurement report recommending the award of a contract for $1,690,100 to Oregon Ironworks. On October 8, 2012, a request for proposals was issued for the manufacture, delivery, and attachment of a boathouse to existing pilings for Fire Station 21. A pre-proposal meeting was held on October 15th, and five interested parties attended. On November 6th, the city received one proposal. That proposal was reviewed and evaluated by a five-person evaluation committee that included a minority evaluator. The evaluation committee determined that Oregon Ironworks was responsive to the RFP and met the city's requirements. Oregon Ironworks is a locally owned business located in Clackamas, Oregon, and is classified as a small business under federal guidelines. Because of the scope of work of this project, Oregon Ironworks is self-performing most of the work on this project and has not identified any state-certified MWESB subcontractors in their proposal. In further conversations with OWI during contract negotiations, they have now identified a women-owned business that will be providing the boathouse structure as a subcontractor. We will assist this business with obtaining state certification. The boathouse will be delivered via water, where it will be floated down the Columbia River and up the Willamette River from OWI's private marina, lessening the environmental impact for delivery. At this point, I will turn it over to Chief Janssens to talk more specifically about the project, and I would be happy to answer any questions about the contracting process.
Good morning, Mayor, Council members. This boathouse, as you've heard about just now and over the numerous past months, is going to provide security for our fire rescue craft at Station 21, along with the new fire boat that's soon to be delivered at the end of the summer. It will protect these life-saving resources for the Fire Bureau that have been problematic without having boathouses. It provides security from any of our resources and equipment being tampered with that has happened. It also reduces the maintenance on our fire boats and watercraft. And then with improving or reducing the maintenance, that improves the longevity of these things, as well as improving our response time to incidents during the winter months. As you know, the pilings were completed for the boathouse in October, and the design, I believe, will complement both the East Bank Esplanade as well as the east waterfront that is viewable from the downtown. So I believe that you'll find it an aesthetically pleasing design, although it has been very complicated to design the boathouse because of the dimensional requirements. So that has caused some complications, but I think that those were overcome with the design, and I believe that it will be an asset to the city. If you have any questions for us,
Mayor,
we're prepared
please.
For those.
So I appreciate, Chief, the briefing that was given to my chief of staff. I just want to make sure I understand a couple of details. So the bid we got is roughly twice the soft estimate that we were originally working with. Is that about right?
Correct. There was a low confidence on that initial bid.
I remember that.
Estimate.
Okay. And in terms of the additional cost, my understanding is that you were able to secure a grant to cover a significant portion of that additional cost?
Yes, thank you. I apologize that I omitted that or didn't. It didn't just include that in my briefing. We were successful in obtaining a grant for $800,000 from the Port Security. And in that grant, it's imperative that we get started immediately, as we have a deadline that we need to have to go ahead with the contract. That's imperative that we get that signed by the 31st of this month. And then we have a very short performance that we have deliverables due by April in order to benefit from the $800,000 of that grant.
And so just so that I'm clear then, Chief, we have a situation where low confidence estimate, single bidder. We have a bid that's almost twice what was originally estimated based on low confidence estimate. Mm-hmm. You've been able to secure a grant of funds that are non-city funds that covers, my understanding is, gets us to within about $100,000 of the original low confidence estimate if you made the adjustments?
That's correct.
And then the reason this is coming to us as, let me just see something. This is a procurement report, so you're asking for us to adopt it today. And there's a timing issue that time is of the essence in terms of moving forward.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
So there was a greenway permit issued for the boathouse?
Yes. Correct? At this point, I'm going to turn that part over to Chief Eisner. He has been intricately involved on
I don't have any intricate
yeah.
questions here, Chief.
Okay.
I just want to make sure that the Bureau will be in full conformance with all conditions of the greenway permit.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So there's no question about that?
No.
Okay.
No, we're in good shape.
Okay. Thank you.
Just following up from Commissioner Novick's comments on the last item, what's to prevent there being cost overruns in this contract?
Can you address that?
It's a hard the contract price we have is a hard dollar figure.
Right, but we often get amendments to contracts, as in the previous one, we had 9 amendments to the streetcar. So, is there any mechanism to make sure that if it's the price is the price?
So there's also the contract. There's a structure for payment upon deliverables. So at certain segments within the time frame, and the chief mentioned April 24th is a big date in which the floating apparatus needs to be delivered in order to receive payment. So that's how I understand the contract is being structured. So there's deliverables, and then they receive payment. Deliverables receive payment.
Chief, I just wanted to revisit an issue that I heard in the briefing the other day. It's my understanding that actually the original bid was substantially larger than $1.6 million, and the Bureau worked with Oregon Ironworks to try to bring it in under their original cost, under their original bid. Is that correct?
That is correct. The original bid, actually, we had a pre-bid meeting or pre-construction meeting, and we had 6 contractors show up for that. And when the bid actually went out and proposals came back in, we had 1 proposal. And that was actually $2.6 million. And then we were able to work with the sole bidder to tighten the price up and reduce it down to the 1.69.
So can you reflect a little bit on, excuse me, on that? And that is, how is it that in a fairly desperate construction environment, it's getting better, but no one's singing happy days are here again yet in the construction world. We had 6 potential bidders show up, and only 1 actually submitted a bid. Why'd that happen in this case?
You know, it was a very complicated design due to the dimensions and the float system in particular. The float system is very expensive. And I will share that I struggled with that myself of why is this so expensive. So along with the float system being extremely expensive, the design, the dimensions, the way that it needs to be open for the boats to enter kind of contradict the running of the joists and the spans for the trusses. So it was a very complicated system to take that all the way down to the float system. Do you want to elaborate anymore?
The other thing that occurred was we required it to be an engineered system, and we just didn't want any structure being set on a float. We required it to be structurally engineered. That was part of the proposal, and some of the firms were reluctant to spend a significant amount of time doing the engineering.
So any lessons there? I mean, is this just a one-off and a peculiar situation, but any lessons for the next project that from your experience on this one, that whether for your Bureau or any other? I mean, obviously we'd like more competition.
Mm-hmm.
Competition is good. That's why we put things out to bid. Any sense of, if we had to do it all over again, how we might, or for the next project, what might we do to engender more competition?
So There's a limited amount of firms that actually do this type of work because it's off-site fabrication that then has to be, like, floated down. So, I mean, all the big players that would have proposed were at the pre-proposal meeting. And then I think for some of the reasons that Chief Eisner explained, they chose not to bid.
Yeah, okay. And this isn't your problem, but there's a peculiar coincidence here that this item is on the council calendar and Oregon Ironworks is also late in delivery on other responsibilities for the city. So I don't know if the procurement office or anyone else is monitoring their capacity to carry out both of these contracts, but it's certainly the concern was raised in my mind when I saw these come through. So something for maybe Peabody.
We will monitor it very, very closely.
Okay. I mean, obviously, I suspect it's a different division of the company that builds floating boathouses and streetcars, but the question is obvious and should be raised. Do they have the capacity to deliver on both of these responsibilities, given that they are finally getting to the point of delivering the streetcars that we've ordered?
We've had many discussions with them about that issue, and they have assured us that they are prepared to take this on and to meet the timeline. That was another part of the, or another factor that I think may have weighed into the other proposers or would have been proposers, is the fact that we had very tight timelines because we knew we had this grant and obligations to meet with the deliverables. So I think that that was a factor for some of the others, and Oregon Ironworks is very aware of that.
Okay. So, I'm sorry. Sure? So if we don't, you said it's a very aggressive timeline. I think you mentioned February 24th or April?
April.
Okay. So what happens if we
they
don't?
They have specific deliverables that they need to meet within that timeline.
And if they don't, do we lose the $900,000 or $800,000 federal grant?
I believe they do.
They do, meaning? I mean, the grant was.
Project to, does, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So currently, we're still negotiating the contract with Oregon Ironworks, and there is a provision in there that says, that tells about the deadlines, and if they don't meet the April 24th deadline, then that is something that the expenses won't be charged to the city.
So if we lose the $800,000 federal money, they will make it up, or will you be coming back to us to make it up? Who's responsible for making up the deficit in a scenario?
In the current draft contract, it says that the expenses wouldn't be charged to the city. So basically, Oregon Ironworks would not be charging us for not meeting that April 24th deadline.
Well, I'm sorry, maybe jump in. Is the grant to Oregon Ironworks or is the grant to us?
No, it's to us.
So we receive the grant. We use the grant to help reimburse the cost mm-hmm. of the project, right? But
yes.
there's a schedule with respect to that grant that we have to hold to in order to obtain it.
Correct.
Okay. So, but back to your question, if for some reason something went wrong and the grant funds weren't received, are we fully obligated? In other words, seems to me we ought to have the grant funds assured before we sign the contract, right?
Grant is.
The grant is secure, providing that we meet the deliverables. And it's my understanding that the contract that we are working on with Oregon Ironworks ensures that if they do not meet those deliverables within the time frame to prohibit us from receiving the funds, that they will essentially be responsible for that. So they will be absorbing those costs.
Okay, I get it. So we're held harmless.
I believe so. That's our intent.
In the event of their failure to perform.
Correct.
Okay. I guess, this is my last comment. I'd like to see the provisions in the contract that speak to that.
Okay.
So somebody can send it to me. Thank you.
Other questions?
So since I have to vote first, and this is an emergency, No, it's a report, so we have to vote on it today. I'd like to hear from the attorneys on the council and others as to whether you're comfortable with moving forward with it.
You just lost one attorney. Can't take the heat.
Following up on Commissioner Saltzman's question, if we vote to approve this today, could you still go back and make sure that in fact, we are held harmless if Oregon Iron Works doesn't meet the deadlines and we lose the grant? I mean, can we make sure that that language is in the contract?
Yes. We currently have a draft contract, so the contract is not executed yet. So there's still opportunities to put additional language into the contract.
Okay.
Well, you've heard the council's concerns about this. Yeah. Obviously, make sure that the draft that's ultimately converted to the contract does indeed hold us harmless if, for some reason, their failure to perform results in the loss of the grant funds. And Commissioner Saltzman and perhaps others would like to see that.
Well, and actually receiving the grant funds is contingent upon providing those deliverables. So yeah. It's not like we have that money and we're waiting to distribute it. We have to have certain things met by Oregon Iron Works in order to receive and then pass that money on to them. So if
they came in at $2.6 million, we've already gotten down to $1.7 million, but then we would ask them to eat the $800,000. That seems would be them be coming back and saying, would they be coming back saying, we don't want to build your boathouse after all?
So I actually have the language. So the language in the contract says boathouse items agreed to be completed by April 24th, 2013 deadline that are not completed shall be completed by the contractor at no expense to PFNR or the City of Portland.
But Ms. Moody, that doesn't seem to address the question of if we lose $800,000 due to they're not completing it, do they pay us back the $800,000 one way or another?
That $800,000, we don't even receive that until they complete the deliverables of the grant, and then we demonstrate that, and then we pass that money on to them, and then we're reimbursed.
It's a reimbursable grant.
Right, okay, Glenn? But I mean, could we have language that says more explicitly that Oregon Iron Works will do this work for $1.7 million if we get the grant, but for $800,000 or $900,000, whatever it is, if we don't get the grant?
Well, I think I'm starting to. This is a reimbursement grant.
Right.
Okay. All right. So it's not the situation that I described earlier where we get the grant, we execute the contract, we blend the colors of money of our money and the grant money and pay the contract.
Okay.
It's not that at all. It's that you have an advance agreement with this federal agency that this is a reimbursement grant. As you get this thing done, the federal government sends us money. Mm-hmm. So, right? Am I describing it correctly now?
And we won't pay if they haven't performed that work by August 24th. We will not pay them.
Yeah.
We also won't get any of the grant money.
And we wouldn't get the boathouse built then?
We will get the boathouse built. They need to have that done. They are on a very aggressive timeline.
Yeah, let's hope we don't get to the nightmare scenario that all of us were worried about. But that is, I suspect it's not practicable for this contractor or any other to deliver a $1.6 million boathouse for $800,000.
Right.
So therefore...
They're motivated.
They're motivated, and it's a progress payments scheme partially reimbursed by the federal government. So everyone has a stake in staying on schedule.
Yes.
So again, I'll ask my question before I vote. Are we comfortable moving forward with it today, or since we have another meeting next week before the 31st deadline, does anybody want more time to look over the contract details?
My sense is, and perhaps in this case, not in every case, but because of some sensitivities to this one, it might be good for all council members to receive a copy of the contract before it's signed, even though only one commissioner needs to sign it. My personal comfort level is I'm happy to vote on this today, but I do want to see the language. That's where I am.
Same here.
I'm prepared to go for it. I appreciate the record we've created of our concerns and the fact that we don't expect to be presented with a bill down the road for any deficiency.
Okay. Do we have any public testimony on this item?
No one else signed up.
Okay.
Okay.
Sure.
Thank you
very much. Appreciate it. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Lightning, and I do find it interesting on this bid process that Oregon Iron Works is the only one that submitted a bid. First of all, and I'll ask this question, is that how many boathouses has Oregon Iron Works built in Portland? And that's one of my questions. Looking at other projects they've done, see how well they've done. I understand that the predominant boathouse builders in this city are like Steelhead Construction, Ducks Construction. These people build boathouses every other day, every other month. I've never heard of Oregon Iron Works building a boathouse. Now, I find this bid unusually high.